Devaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, The Characteristics of King Paranjana, Text 41. Ka nama vira vikyatam vadanyam priya darshanam na vranita priyam praptam madrishi tvadrisham patim kanama vira vikyatam vadanyatam priyadarshanam navranita priyam praptam madrishi tvadrisham patim kanama vira vikyatam vadanyam priyadarshanam navranita priyam praptam madrishi tvadrisham patim kanama vira vikyatam vadanyam priyadarshanam navranita priyam praptam madrishi tvadrisham patim
Come.
Vaishnavis, Nama, indeed. Vira, my dear hero. Vikyatam, famous. Vadanyatam, magnanimous. Priyadarshanam, beautiful. Na, not. Vrinita, would accept. Priyam, easily. Praptam, gotten. Madrishi, like me. Tvadrisham, like you. Patim, translation, excuse me, husband. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Oh, my dear hero, who in this world will not accept a husband like you? You are so famous, so magnanimous, so beautiful, and so easily gotten. Please repeat. Oh, my dear hero, who in this world will not accept a husband like you? You are so famous, so magnanimous, so beautiful, and so easily gotten. Purport. Every husband is certainly a great hero to his wife. In other words, if a woman loves a man, that man appears very beautiful and magnanimous. unless one becomes beautiful in the eyes of another, one cannot dedicate his whole life to another. The husband is considered very magnanimous because he gives as many children to the wife as she likes. Every woman is fond of children. Therefore, any husband who can please his wife by sex and give her children is considered very magnanimous. Not only does the husband become magnanimous by begetting children, but by giving his wife ornaments, nice food, and dresses, he keeps her completely under submission. Such a satisfied wife will never give up the company of her husband. Manu Samhita recommends that to keep a wife satisfied, a husband should give her some ornaments, because women are generally fond of home, ornaments, dresses, children, etc. In this way, the woman is the center of all material enjoyment. Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the last sentence of between, you know, King Paranjana and this woman here. And we can see that what's happening here is not, you know, a question of somebody walking down the street and then somebody's following her down some dark alley and he comes and chokes her and throws her to the ground and takes advantage of her sexually. That's not what's really going on in this case, you know, as we can see. So that's not what Srila Prabhupada is talking about. He's talking about the fact that in a romantic relationship, generally it's the man who's taking the initiative, and that a woman generally likes a man to take the initiative in a romantic relationship. And that's clearly what's being talked about here. In other words, Srila Prabhupada appears to be saying here that, you know, a woman, you know, appreciates a man who's kind of expert at seduction. And I was looking at, you know, the history of the term, you know, rape. And it goes back to, you know, the word comes from Latin. You know, it goes back to Roman times. And even in those times, it was sometimes used for even willing relationships between, you know, men and women. You know, for example, if a man seduced a woman willingly, even if she was willing, still, according to the law, it was considered to be not a legal relationship, because normally a woman is expected to become married in a proper way. You know, and, you know, at least in Roman law, that was, you know, the idea that, so if somebody even willingly, you know, a man seduced a woman and she was even willing, still that was considered illegal. So sometimes Srila Prabhupada would use words in ways that referred to these kind of antique meanings of words that aren't really very common today. So definitely he's not referring to, you know, somebody walking through a park and being accosted by a gang of people and being violently raped. That's not what's being discussed here. And there are many places in his conversations and elsewhere in the Bhagavatam where, you know, Srila Prabhupada said this sort of thing is a crime, it's a symptom of Kali Yuga, people should be rightly punished for that, it's a result of people losing control of their senses, a man losing control of his senses, and that's not what human life is all about, that's animal life and things like that. So that's not really what's being discussed here. If we go back to the the very beginning of the story, we see that Paranjana has come to this city of nine gates, and he goes into the park and he sees a beautiful woman there. Now, if he just sat down in the park and read his newspaper and didn't pay any attention to her, there'd be no story. There are lots of times, when a man will see a beautiful woman in the park and won't do anything. All right, there's so many beautiful women, so what? I've got other things to do. But that isn't what happens here. He approaches her and says, my dear beautiful girl, what are you doing here in this park all by yourself? What about your husband? And so sometimes, we see that men behave in this way, and it's something that many women like, being the object of attention, being approached by someone. And so he goes on to, address her, my dear beautiful girl, you're exactly like a goddess of fortune or the wife of Lord Shiva, or the goddess of learning. In other words, he's complimenting her on how she looks. And generally women like this, to be complimented in some way. Even as we were hearing some of the devotees describe how they distribute books at the airport, they say, great hair, wonderful outfit, great outfit, because people are, generally, either men or women, they appreciate being complimented on their appearance. So he goes on, complimenting her in this way. Certainly your glancing upon me today has very much agitated my mind. Your smile, which is full of shyness, but at the same time lusty, is agitating the most powerful Cupid within me. Therefore, O most beautiful one, I ask you to be merciful upon me. So here it's kind of gone beyond compliments. And you could say, well, he's making a pass at her in normal parlance. But still, it's not like he's grabbed her by the neck and thrown her to the ground. You're just saying, I have some feelings for you. And she responds in a positive way. Just said, "Oh, great hero! I'm also attracted to you." And as far as husband goes, she mentions, any girl would be happy to have a husband like you. So she's more or less saying she's available, like, she doesn't have a husband. This also goes on in relationships. You want to find out, is the person married or not married? So this is all becoming clear here. And then I think what happens after this particular verse here is also important. Like in the next verse, the girl goes on to say, "O mighty armed, who in this world would not be attracted by your arms, which are just like the bodies of serpents? Actually, you relieve the distress of husbandless women like us, by your attractive smile and your aggressive mercy. We think you are traveling on the surface of the earth only to benefit us." So then the great sage Narada continued, "My dear king, those two, the man and the woman, supporting one another through mutual understanding, entered that city and enjoyed life for 100 years as husband and wife." Really. So it's not the kind of thing that most people today envision when they hear this term rape. So what's being talked about here is this, you could say, aggressive seduction of the woman, who's a willing woman, as we can see, who appreciates the attention, and their kind of mutual agreement, you know, to live together as, you know, husband and wife in the city of Nine Gates. So it's easy to understand, you know, how if somebody just takes a quote like this out of context and looks at it, that they could become very disturbed, and you know, maybe it even needs more explanation than is given here, you know, for people to properly understand what the term is, because when some people, you know, read a statement like this, they put it into another context, and it seems, you know, very, very bad in some ways. And that's what I have to say about that part of the purport. And, you know, the other parts are, again, just basic psychology. You know, in Srimad Bhagavatam, we learn about so many things. We learn about the structure of the universe. We learn how to count the material elements through Sankhya philosophy. We learn about the process of reincarnation. We learn about, you know, the different incarnations of Krishna. We learn about the three modes of material nature. But we also learn many things about psychology, about dealings between men and women. And, you know, this can help us in our advancement in Krishna consciousness to understand these things. Of course, this story of King Paranjana, it's an allegory that operates on many levels. You know, we've seen that on a higher level, Paranjana represents the soul, the conditioned soul who's entered the material world, and, you know, the city of Nine Gates is the material body, and the woman represents the intelligence of, you know, represents the intelligence. And this intelligence can be either material or spiritual. If the intelligence is influenced in a material way, then it simply encourages the conditioned soul to enjoy the senses, the bodily senses, in the city of Nine Gates. But this intelligence can also operate in a spiritual way, as we'll see later on, where the intelligence encourages the conditioned soul to understand it really doesn't belong in the city of Nine Gates. You know, it has another home. It comes from the spiritual world, and where it has an eternal loving relationship with Krishna. So this allegory of, you know, the city of nine gates. It operates on many, many different levels. So the main level is this idea that the woman in the story represents the intelligence, and that the king represents the conditioned soul, and that the real solution to all of the problems is to get out of the city of nine gates, go back to one's original spiritual home. And if the intelligence is operating in the proper way, the intelligence will help the soul do that, go back home, back to Godhead. So that's the higher meaning of this allegory, but it also has, as we see here, another level of interpretation, just in terms of the dealings of men and women in this material world. So in this particular purport, you know, Srila Prabhupada's commenting on the allegory on that level, kind of leaving aside, you know, the higher level of understanding that Paranjana is the conditioned soul and the woman is the intelligence, and just looking at them as man and woman in this world, and commenting on the psychology that's there and the relationships between men and women, between male and female in this world. Of course, today our society is somewhat different. You know, modern society is somewhat different than Vedic society. I mean, Srila Prabhupada's describing how, you know, a woman appreciates having a husband who can give, you know, children and a house. And even in the West, in the, you know, the time, you know, my parents, my mother, for example, you know, she never worked, you know, outside the house. And that was very, very common in the 1950s. That, you know, the woman basically was the partner to the husband. And most of them were not working outside the home. So basically the situation that's described here, the woman would be very happy if, you know, she could have some children and a house and everything she needed to conduct the household, and she'd do that. And, you know, the husband was working outside, you know, the house, you know, to provide these things for the wife and the children, and wasn't necessarily like a perfect arrangement. Yeah, because after all, it's the material world, but it's somewhat different than the situation today, where because of the economy, it basically takes at least two incomes to support, you know, a house, and it's become you have to have, you know, children and a home. It requires like a lot of work, so. And today, women, they're more or less forced under the economic situation that there is today. They also have to work, and they become their psychology is a little bit different than is depicted here, because they know they have to work. They have to think about a career. You know, they're not necessarily looking to have, you know, children right away. You know, it's a little bit of a different mentality. Now, whether that's better, you know, than the situation that there was before is, you know, something people can discuss, but it's a reality, you know, today that most, you know, women don't have the luxury of, you know, just finding a husband who's going to provide them with a nice house, nice children, everything they need so that they can carry out, you know, their responsibilities, like it's being described here. You know, so But this was, yeah, the situation under Vedic culture. And even in the West, it was like that also until, you know, a couple of decades ago when, you know, the economic system started changing a bit. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes.
Even in modern day uses, the statutory rape is voluntary usually. But it's
right.
Called rape, even though it's willing.
Yes.
But the girl is younger than 18. It's statutory rape.
Yes. Yeah, that's also true.
Hare Krishna, thank you, Prabhu, for the class. I just wondered, in the last paragraph it has, in this regard, the word vikyatam is very significant. Can you say anything about why vikyatam is very significant?
Vikyatam means famous. And why do people become famous? It's because of some quality, you know, that they have. And and we see that one way that a man becomes famous is if he's very attractive to women. I mean, there's movie stars. So why is Johnny Depp or someone like that, you know, like famous and successful? Is it just because he dresses in a pirate suit? I mean, I don't think so. It's, you know, because somehow, you know, he's a very dashing, handsome personality, and women find that attractive, so they're willing to go see the movies and bring their boyfriends and husbands along to see them too. Or many pop stars, say rock musicians or popular singers, they become famous. And why is it, you know, that they become famous? Is it just because they can sing nicely? Or is there something else going on? Like, I mean, I was around during what they called Beatlemania. Yeah, when the Beatles first came out. And I mean, as a 16-year-old guy, you know, or whatever, well, they can sing, but really, who was going to the concerts and screaming their head off were the girls. I remember one of the girls from my high school, you know, she actually, you know, after she saw, you know, the Beatles on television or in a movie or something, you know, she ran off to London. You know, like, I mean, this was in Germany. We were in Germany. It was, you know, she ran off to, you know, to camp on, you know, one of their doorsteps, you know, just to get some attention somehow or other. So I think one way that, and also it's the same with women. If a woman can become very famous in society by being known as a femme fatale or something like that, you know, like, you know, being, you know, very attractive, you know, to men. So the word vikyatam, which means you're known, you're famous. In high school, sort of like that, people become known. Like if somebody's a ladies' man, he becomes known among the ladies. If there's a girl who's, you know, she becomes known. So I think that's what Prabhupada's referring here to. In this regard, the word vikyatam is very significant. A man is always famous for his, you know, aggression towards a beautiful woman. And yeah, we just see that that's how society is structured. And really, all these things are really perverted reflections of spiritual realities. Just like Krishna is famous, you know, for stopping Radharani from, you know, carrying her milk products, you know, for sale. So it's called the Dana Keli Leela, you know, where Radharani and the gopis, they're going through this narrow pass to go somewhere to sell their milk products, and then Krishna and the cowherd boys are there, and they stop them and say, "You've got to pay a tax." You know, that's a little aggressive. And then, you know, Radharani and the gopis, they object. You know, it becomes a big fight, you know. But it's famous. The Dana Keli Leela is very famous. And Krishna was being a little aggressive there. And Radharani, she externally didn't like it, but internally she liked it, it's said. So that is the actual, you know, perfection. And we, you know, if you go to, you know, Vrindavan, you can go to the place where that Leela happened, and it's worshipped. Krishna's worshipped for that. You know, for, you know, his naughty, aggressive, you know, behavior towards Radharani. And there are other examples of that, you know, where the Gopi Vastra Harana Leela, where, you know, Krishna steals, you know, the clothes of the, you know, bathing gopis and makes them come out of the river without their clothes. So so there's all of these things are, you know, perverted reflections of spiritual realities. And in the perfection, it's only Krishna has that privilege, you know, to behave like that. And Ekalishvara Krishna Arasava Britya. So these, I mean, Srila Prabhupada was once asked, is it the reason we come to the spiritual world, is it because we want to imitate Krishna? So yes, it is. We want to imitate Krishna. And sometimes people, they try to imitate Krishna in very, very perverted ways. And they suffer for that. They're punished for it. I mean, there are all kinds of hellish planets that are going to be described in the fifth canto. You know, for people who want to imitate Krishna in a perverted way, there are all kinds of sufferings that they have to undergo, you know, for trying to do that. But, you know, the spiritual reality, you know, of, you know, Krishna is famous for his aggressive behavior towards Radharani. Yes, Brigapati.
Aside from the economic reason which you mentioned, is there any other reason why marriage has become practically like an imagination almost in human society?
Well, it's Kali Yuga. and their predictions that, like in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a whole list of predictions about what the Kali Yuga will be like. And one of the predictions is that marriage will just be done on the basis of mutual agreement. I like you, you like me, let's get married. And then it's also said that, you know, sexual prowess will be, you know, the only basis of the relationship in as Kali Yuga goes on. So in one sense, it's just predicted as being the nature of the age. So those tendencies are there, but I mean, just because it's raining, it doesn't mean you have to get wet. It means, well, we should take these things into account, and we should try, you know, as best we can not to become victims of the Kali Yuga mentalities ourselves, which is very difficult because, after all, it is Kali Yuga. But we also learn that, you know, the holy name is very powerful. Lord Chaitanya's mercy is very powerful. That if we properly, you know, surrender to the holy name and to the process of Krishna consciousness, then we can overcome the bad influences of the age of Kali. Kaler dosha nadi rajan. It's an ocean of faults in every way. Kaler dosha nadi rajan asti heka mahad guna kirtanadeva krishnasya mukta sangam param vajay. But there's one good thing about the Kali Yuga, is that if we take shelter of the holy name, then we can overcome the difficulties. And there are other descriptions of the Kali Yuga that describe people in this age are very unfortunate, full of anxiety, suffering. So, yeah, we can see that in all phases of human life. So thus, and then Banabhata, then maybe it'll be time.
But thank you for a nice explanation. I think it's also kind of important to understand that in Kali Yuga, there's no training either for the, you know, young boys. There's actually no training how to develop some Brahminical culture.
They're trained in the opposite way.
Pardon me?
They're trained in the opposite way.
Yeah, they're trained in the opposite from, I mean, can you imagine kids today, you know, they're being accosted with pornography at 6 years old, 7 years old. And so, you know, we can see that because of this, you know, in that tender age, being completely swamped with all kinds of sexual tones, connotations, that really by the time they get a certain teenage years, they're so disturbed and sexually aroused that they practically don't know anything but that activity. And we see that as Kali Yuga progresses, This type of culture is becoming more and more prominent. And we see even the parents, the mother and father, they come from that culture also. So it's no wonder that these kind of things are going on in Kali Yuga, because there is no training, no Brahminical training whatsoever.
Okay, Banabhata.
Thank you. Very nice explanations. I just wanted to mention, it came to mind, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that among women, I am fame, fortune, speech. Yeah.
Okay, very good. Okay, one more from this side and then we'll stop.
Just briefly, in the reading earlier, it talked about she was shy, and that's a quality that sometimes we don't always see today. And she was shy, and he asked her to look up. And it wasn't that she wasn't interested in him. And I read in one of the discussions in the Veda base on this, and it was more not in rape that he was violating her, but it was actually something that she had some desire, but she wasn't they were different then. People were different then. Women were shy, and you know, she wouldn't have been aggressive herself, so he had to be aggressive. And in this age that we're in now, we see more that the women are aggressive, maybe more aggressive than the men. So we can see kind of a difference between when they call it rape then and what we call now. Because he was famous, and it said he was famous for aggression, but he was also, you know, they're talking words like beautiful and magnanimous and those kind of things. So I just guess I'm saying again what you've already said, is that it wasn't that kind of a violent thing, but that she was acting shyly, but it wasn't that she wasn't interested.
Yes. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.